We call the Agriculture, Environment, Natural Resources, Finance Committee to order. And let's see, the first order of business, we have a forum, so our first order of business will be the approval of the minutes on March 16th. Are there any additions or corrections? Okay, hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails, minutes are approved. Members, this morning we have the Clean Water Legacy Act that want to go over that bill and to get it cleaned up. We have in your folders a delete everything amendment, and it is identified with today's date and of or maybe it's yesterday's date. I don't know what today is. Yeah, yesterday's date. And it is S76D2E2. It's a delete everything amendment to Senate File 762. And so I'd like to bring File 762 before us and present the delete everything amendment. Is there any discussion on that motion? We have the delete everything amendment moved to Senate File 762. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Members, I'd like to quickly just kind of walk through this delete everything amendment so you can see what is here and some of the changes that have taken place since this issue was before us last. As you recall, last year we passed this Clean Water Legacy Bill out of our committee. It went over to the Tax Committee, and we did not see the bill have any action after that. So we asked for it to be sent back to us, and we've made some changes this year. The first part of the bill, Section 1, is actually a provision that was asked for by Representative Hansen that we approved last year, and that is to say if when we have the monies that go to conservation efforts, if that is not, they do not follow through with their side of the bargain, that the penalties would be 150% of the financial assistance. The Section 2 and 3, I believe, are essentially the same as we've had in previous bills. When we get to the definitions, we have a definition for public agencies, and that is the, just so that you know, that is the state agencies, political subdivisions, joint power organizations, so it's forms of government all the way from the state to the grassroots level. The third party TMDL piece on page 3, line 10, it's where TMDL means, third party TMDL means a TMDL by the Pollution Control Agency that is developed whole in part by a qualified public entity other than the Pollution Control Agency, consistent with goals, policies, and priorities. That's a change from what we had in the previous bill. This has the or the third-party organization must be a public entity. And so private entities were earlier identified as being eligible. They are not eligible in this provision. The standards or the other definitions, I believe, are essentially the same. We end up on the bottom of page 3, talk about implementation, coordination, goals, and priorities. And these are essentially the same language that we've had before. We're talking about here just setting up the types of activity that we'd like to really see stressed in order to try and assist the agencies in their coordinations, the agencies and departments, and how to go about putting all this together. Keep in mind, this particular document does not create any new mandates and or regulations, what it's really doing is talking about how governments will work together in order to provide the activities that need to occur in order for us to come into compliance with the Federal Clean Water Act. And as that happens, we would then we want to make sure that the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency stays in charge of all those activities. That's what the federal government requires, so it's not that we could actually change that. But we reemphasize that in much of the language that we have here. And as you remember, we worked on quite a bit of that last year. We also have a clean water console that is set up in here, and people have pointed to that as being another form of bureaucracy. And I want you to realize that this is just strictly an advisory console. This is not an organization that has power within itself. You'll see as it's referred to the Clean Water Council throughout the document, and this is the way it has been. This is not a change. But because of controversy, I wanted to try and make sure that everyone understands that this is there to make recommendations and advice, both to the agencies as well as to the administration and to the legislature. They cannot take action on their own, but when it comes to priorities, for example, where do you first spend your dollars in order to be able to have the biggest impact on dealing with impaired waters? Activities should occur first. It's where the agencies and departments will be able to go to get some citizen input on how to handle those questions. And they'll make recommendations, and including setting up a plan on how this can be implemented. But again, it's a recommendation. It's not something that's locked in. The agencies may or may not take the advice, because the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency is the one that's always in charge on this. That's according to federal law. And the recommendations will make the will be made to the legislature and through our regular legislative process. Every 2 years, they'll set up a budget and recommend a budget. And that recommendation will go to the administration. That'll become part of the governor's proposal. If the governor agrees with those recommendations, they then come to us in the budgetary process. The legislature will then, as they pass that budget recommendation forward, then when it becomes comes out of the conference committees, if the governor signs it, then that's the budget. That's how things will actually be spent. It's not that the council doesn't set how the money will be spent. They recommend it. But we're the ones that make the decision as to how the dollars will actually be spent on a biennium basis. Just to try and clear that up, so that, and that's not unusual. We have citizen advisory groups on other agencies. DNR has one that helped them set up, give them advice on their budget. We have them come in and testify to us as to what their recommendations were to the DNR. The Minnesota Pollution Control Agency has a citizens board. They have more power. This one is just recommendations where they actually have the authority to make decisions. This council will not. This council is something I think gives us that citizen input from knowledgeable people on the issue to help our bureaucracies make good quality decisions and keep that common sense component that we want to have in the process. Sometimes you can live by the letter of the law, but you can make it very complex and make it very costly. And we think that citizens can take a look at that and help put common sense into it, where we can include efficiency and accountability as to how we're actually dealing with this overall issue. So that's how that coordination is to take place. So we go on to on page 8, you have the third-party TMDL development. And again, this says that the Pollution Control Agency may enter into agreements with qualified public agencies. And so that is a something that it's a flexibility that we provide for the agency. They are currently doing it, but we're establishing these things as public policy, not just an activity that and a way of doing things by the agencies and departments. My personal comment is that I believe the administration through the agencies and departments have been doing a good job of dealing with trying to identify the impaired waters and taking the limited number of dollars that they have and having some positive impact with regard to TMDL development and cleanup activities. I know that they work hard at their prevention efforts so that we don't ever get to where we need to, where we have impaired waters or need TMDLs. But if we establish this in policy, state policy, even though it is current practice, that means we have some confidence as we're starting to put additional monies into this activity that this process will remain the same. So we're not changing what's occurring today. What we're doing is kind of codifying what's occurring today so that the activities will continue to go forward in the future, even though we are increasing monies. That we don't have circumstances occur where we increase the dollars and then people start going off on a different tangent because there's a change of attitude in the bureaucracies. So this is having legislative confidence placed into the process and getting us to be where future legislators will know what that process is. And when the bureaucracies want to change or feel that there's a need to actually change the process, they then have to come back to the legislature and include us in on that change. Without this document, they would just continue the way they're going, but additional monies could come in, they could change their mind on how they're handling that money. That loses confidence in the overall process. We want to know, as we're talking about trying to put significant support behind this overall effort, that consistency is there, and that consistency means that the legislature needs to be involved. We talk about the membership with regard to the Clean Water Council, and I'm not quite sure if there's been any changes in that recently, but maybe some of our testifiers would speak to that if there had been. I know there have been some requests for change. As we go through that, we also have on page 10 where we have the public stakeholder participation, scientific review. We want to make certain that the activities continue focused on good quality scientific information, scientific data, and that is established in two or three different places within the bill. We then have the appropriations section, which is on page 11, section 9, and this is how we'd be recommending to spend the limited dollars that we're talking about this year. And this is, I believe, down to the, includes the approach with regard to $20 million that the governor has included in his supplemental recommendation. And so this would be how the G16 is suggesting that we would appropriate or authorize appropriation of those dollars. So we will have some specific testimony in that area also. That kind of gives you a quick overview, members, of what this document does and the changes that we've made. The biggest change with regard to the appropriations is that before, you recall, when the document left here, it had that was relying upon fees. I think we originally had it from the septic and sewer lines. We rejected that. We then put in a recommendation maybe we could use improved properties. That was not eyed very favorably by many legislative members. We also had a recommendation that we'd included to put the issue on the ballot to see if we could get some dedicated dollars towards the sales tax going towards a clean water. That's also controversial. I believe that particular issue maybe is traveling on its own in another document, another bill, and so we've taken that out of here. The only thing that we have before us right now is a recommendation for direct appropriation out of the general fund towards this effort. And so that's the major change that has taken place with regard to finance, and that's the major issue that we're dealing with today in this committee, is how this bill would actually be financed. And this follows up on the $20 million that the governor has in his supplemental bill. With that, I'd like to go to some testimony, and I know I have a page here somewhere. There we are. First to testify on this will be Craig Johnson of League of Minnesota Cities. Unless there are some questions from members at this point, Rick, thanks.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just had one question on the third-party CMDLs on public agencies. What all would that include?
That includes, for our purposes, it'll, you know, like watershed districts are public agencies, soil and water conservation district, counties, townships, and all the state governmental organizations.
Okay, thank you.
But it would have to be some sort of government activity. Representative Joe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Same section, page 3, line 3.10. Is that the language from the Knobloch bill? It looks similar to that.
Page 3?
Page 3 on the Delete All Amendment, line 3.1, section subdivision 9. Third-party TMDL. Is that where that language came from?
I believe so.
Okay. And then qualified public entity, line 3.11, by a qualified public entity, I'm thinking of two things regarding qualifications. One, a public entity, that qualifies them in that context to do the third-party TMDL. But is that qualified also relating to their ability to do the science work? I'm thinking of, they are qualified as a public entity, but does that also refer to the science?
Representative Bill, I believe that, and we'll have, see if council can help us with that word, or maybe the MPCA, when they come up for testimony to get further clarification. But the qualified doesn't... It means that the certainly there has to be some expertise that would need to occur, and they may have to contract out in order for some of that expertise.
Okay.
But I think that qualification kind of covers that area. But it's the public entity that we're really trying to focus on, because people were concerned or raised question with regard to some private entities,
right,
and their involvement, and they were afraid that some nonprofit organizations could maybe come in inappropriately and get involved, and this would say, no, a nonprofit would not be able to be in charge of a third-party TMDL. It would be a public entity that would take the lead.
And to that point, Mr. Chairman, I think that this language addresses in the public hearings that we had out in the field that point quite well.
Yes.
And thank you for putting this in the amendment. Delete all.
And members, this is the first time that we've had the chance to kind of respond to many of those of that input that we had around the state from those hearings. So we had this bill sent back over to us from the tax committee so that we could actually respond and make some of those changes. Representative Wiggins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Since we're suggesting something that's somewhat new here. If an agency, a public agency, were to hire somebody who was qualified in the area of science to do some work, do we have a way, or would that be expected to be made public data right away, that it would go up on a website so that people can understand? Because I think a lot of what's going on is people wanting to know. Is that part and parcel of this?
We have some specific locations and recommendations with regard to and requirements with regard to public exposure. So when the agency comes up, if they could maybe, or other testifiers, if they would speak to that specific issue when you have the opportunity, when it fits into your presentation, I think that's an important issue.
It's the timing I'm interested sure. in. I know it will come eventually. It's the question of when it comes.
Okay. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourselves for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I will begin. My name is Mike Robertson, representing the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. And you've seen us all before, and we will be brief this morning and answer any questions you may have. We are still together. We have been together, the business community, the agricultural community, the environmental community, and local government for the past 3 years and working on this legislation. We maintain our strong commitment to this bill. We want to thank Representative Osment for his perseverance in pursuing this legislation. And just to remind everyone, we're here because of the Federal Clean Water Act, which says that we can have no new or increased discharge into the waters of our state if the waters are impaired and if a plan is not in place to deal with that impairment. And we are now beginning to feel the pressures of that with permits that are being affected at the Pollution Control Agency. So we in the business community have a strong concern about the impact on economic development, that we maintain and preserve and restore our environment. And all of us represented at this table today are committed to move this issue forward and to work for its passage, and we think that this is the way to begin to address the problem of the Clean Water Act. And I will turn it over to Craig, who talked about issues related to the cities.
Mr. Robinson and whoever testifying, if you could maybe point out what has changed since the legislature last was looking at this bill to today, it kind of maybe gives a little more urgency to our action. We would like to have that on the records.
Mr. Chairman, what has changed is the appellate court decision and the action surrounding that. The appeal is awaiting at the Supreme Court. The PCA has put together a list of more than 60 potential permittees who are seeking new discharges or expanded discharges that are real facilities that could be impacted by that action of the court. And we perceive this to be an ongoing threat that will be there for many years to come if we do not begin to address this serious problem.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you. My name is Craig Johnson. I'm representing the League of Minnesota Cities, and I will pick up where Mike left off with the things that have changed. And many of you were involved in the committee's interim hearings, so I'm not going to go into any detail on this, but for those that weren't able to attend those hearings, the short version is Annandale and Maple Lake, the case that we've talked about the last 2 years as being the potential for having an impact on the state, happened. The state appellate court ruled that the state agency had acted inappropriately by issuing a permit to allow that wastewater treatment plant to be built because it would increase the amount of phosphorus going into waters that contribute to Lake Pepin. Lake Pepin's nutrient impairment problem. So we were found to be violating the Federal Clean Water Act, and the permit was knocked down. That is in front of the Supreme Court. The arguments haven't happened there yet, but regardless, it's an example of what can happen when you get crosswise with the federal law on this issue. We do have a list of, and it's a mixture of cities, of private industries, that are trying to either build new facilities or expand that have been told that they will either have to not go forward with those plans or significantly change, and at pretty significant expense in many cases, their facility to get around that prohibition on new permits. Additionally, in the bill, I think there's a couple of significant changes that Representative Osmond mentioned, but one is that this now is funded with the general fund and that the governor has actually made room in the supplemental budget for $20 million to do this. That is a significant change over sitting here talking about your favorite flush tax that we talked about last year. And it's a great relief to my members that we actually are looking at general fund funding for this right now. That really wasn't a reality when we were looking at coming in with a billion-dollar plus deficit a year ago. So, finer changes that are in here, there are changes to the Clean Water Council's makeup that were requested both at last session and over the discussion at the interim hearings. There was one member added for, this is on page 9, the top of the page, the membership of the Clean Water Council. One member was added to make it so that there are two county representatives on the Clean Water Council. The committee last year added townships. I believe in the local government committee that was added, and that shows up on here. And also a member of tribal government was added. So those are new positions that were put on either during the process last year or because of comments made over the interim hearings, I believe. And then finally, as you may have noted as you look down the appropriations, the other change is that this only addresses the portions of work under the Clean Water Legacy Package that need general fund money to be done. when we came into this legislative session, the group that's been working on this put together their recommendation for what we could do and decided that the first year we really do need to ramp up. You can't just jump in with $80 million a year and spend it, or you'll be throwing money all over the place without the technical support in place to make sure the projects are good. So the proposal came in as $40 million for the ramp-up year, $80 million in the out year. The $20 million in the first year for general fund money is in this bill. The other $20 million, essentially, is bondable. And so you don't see those programs on this right now because we'll be looking for establishing those accounts and getting revenue from those accounts in the bonding bill where that's appropriate and possible. So that's where a lot of, for instance, the city infrastructure is almost all bondable. So most of that work is going to be done there, and that's why you don't see those accounts on here anymore. But it's a very significant part of the bill. It just isn't traveling with this right now. With that, I guess I'm available for questions on any part of the bill.
Mr. Johnson, just one clarification. We had a question earlier with regard to the third-party TMDL definition language, and I believe that's the exact language, or very close to being the exact language, that came through the Senate, that had in the Senate bill. How does that compare with the Knobloch bill? And that was the question.
Mr. Chair, I don't have the Knobloch bill in front of me, but I believe it's the same language. I believe that language was the Senate language that was in that bill.
Thank you. Other questions, members? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Johnson, is it your expectation that the vast majority of this $20 million would be spent on the Lake Pepin watershed issue, or more entirely statewide? How do you view that particular issue?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, no, actually I would expect that the TMDL for Lake Pepin will continue. This will help make sure that there's adequate funding to get it done as quickly as possible, but we will only be speeding it up, you know, by, I don't know, 6 to 9 months maybe is realistic. The problems and the TMDLs we have to do are statewide. We have 2,000 plus impaired waters already listed. We have probably 20 TMDLs that we're now behind on that we had scheduled to start and have not had the funding to get to yet. And so this is actually to start getting all of them done statewide, because Lake Pepin just happens to cover the biggest geographic area. It covers half of the state. But there are lots of other smaller watersheds that actually have the same restriction on them. It just only affects a few property owners in a city or two on that watershed.
Mr. Johnson, if you could maybe also mention about the bonding provisions that we had. We had a few in our bill. Also, I believe that there's some being considered in Representative Gunther's committee today that we anticipate will request will be going to the Capital Investment Committee. You could maybe just cover quickly that information for committee members so they see how this all is pulling together. We have $20 million for the general fund here, and then approximately $20 million of bonding that will be requested of the Capital Investment Committee.
Mr. Chair and members, Representative Osmond can help with my memory on the portions that were put into his bill, but about $3.5 million of the funds were bondable that were going for projects to be done through the Board of Water and Soil Resources and DNR for a number of lakeshore type of projects, lakeshore protection, stream stabilization, and other non-point source kinds of infrastructure projects. Representative Osmond and this committee have got chunks of that listed for consideration in your recommendations for the bonding bill for those two agencies. Another just short of $17 million would go through the Public Facilities Authority, and that money goes almost entirely for local governments to meet water quality infrastructure requirements. Three pots of money there. One is the small community septic replacement program that would allow small communities, whether it's a city or a township or a county, whoever was coming in, to replace failed septic systems and have up to 50% grant for funding to do that. The second is the phosphorus treatment grants program that would cover 75% of the infrastructure cost for cities that have to put phosphorus treatment onto their wastewater plant. That includes going back to March of 2000 when the state started requiring that as a statewide policy. So it's retroactively available to communities. And then the third is additional funding, about $5 million, $5.5 million, just short of that, to the state revolving fund to help get us further down the list of facilities that are waiting for funding to build their wastewater plants.
And if you could mention how that coordinates is different from the TMDL bonding provisions that we passed last year.
The 50% grant program that was in last year's bonding bill, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, there is a current fund that the bonding bill last year had $2 million put into that cities who are, once a TMDL has been completed, if there are new infrastructure requirements put on that community at that point, there is a fund established that allows them to get a 50% grant to cover those infrastructure costs. That's after a TMDL has been completed and after the new infrastructure requirements have been made on the facility. That you did put $2 million in the bonding bill last year on that.
And this year's provision can actually kick in prior to a TMDL?
Mr. Chair and members, the phosphorus grants portion of this is available to any community that needs to put phosphorus onto their facility, whether or phosphorus treatment onto their facility, whether or not a TMDL has been completed. So if a community has already done this, they would get credit for that and would be eligible to get the 75% grant. If they would need to do this to get around the permit ban, they would need to put additional phosphorus treatment on their facility to get their phosphorus level low enough to be able to get a permit now rather than waiting. They certainly could consider doing that. It's a voluntary program. People obviously don't have to do anything. If they want to wait, they can do that. But it would allow them other options for how they can move forward with their community development and economic development while these restrictions are in place for impaired waters.
So they'll be able to use this for prevention, not just wait for to where they become impaired, because as I recall, a TMDL is not required until after you've already been identified as impaired water. Am I correct in that assumption?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. A TMDL comes after a water has already been documented as impaired, added to the federal impaired waters list, and then you put it in line to get its study done to determine how to clean the water up. And this would allow funding at any point before or after a TMDL.
Okay. Representative Genius.
Hi, I need some help understanding. Is when the governor made his original bonding proposal, that was for kind of going down the list of folks who had applied for bonding. Are you talking about a $20 million over and above what the governor had originally proposed?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, that is what we are talking about working on.
Good.
We have worked with committees on both sides to begin getting into those bills and that process, which is moving real quickly this week.
Okay, who's next?
Got a question.
Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Dill.
Oh, that's all right. Page 2, under definitions 2.20, on citizen monitoring, Mr. Johnson, does this language that we have now in the delete all amendment regarding citizen monitoring, I want to make sure I understand that this language and these citations do not provide any additional authority to citizen monitoring on citizen monitoring programs than what was already in current law. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dill, that's exactly correct. What this is referring to is actually the state established a program for how citizen monitoring has to be done that a number of people here were involved in putting together over a couple of year period to make sure that citizen monitoring was being done accurately, consistently, and not in violation of personal property trespass issues. So this just says, yes, they can do citizen monitoring, but it does need to follow all those requirements.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Hill.
Mr. Johnson, then that, and I want to make sure, because I haven't studied that citizen monitoring program in detail, that a citizen monitor cannot go on private property to do citizen monitoring without the person's consent that owns the property. Is that also correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Guineas.
thank you for bringing up the citizen monitoring once again, Representative Dill. Why didn't you include in this proposal to bring back the automatic sampling that the Department of Agriculture was doing and then cut?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't recall us discussing doing it at the time. I think it was just that it didn't come up as a discussion item. And certainly, I mean, that's one of the reasons that there's a need to have ongoing discussions about this, is because as we start looking at where do we have data, where are we missing it, we can think the legislature and the agencies are going to have to decide what kind of data they need to make decisions on this in the future.
And for members, for what Representative Dill was referencing on page 2, line 22, it says the citizen monitoring must be the monitoring that's authorized underneath 115.06 subdivision 4. And in reading that particular section, we have subclause there says this subdivision does not authorize a citizen to enter onto private property for any purpose. So it's clearly in the law that that's the citizen monitoring talking about, and they are prohibited from going on private property for any purpose. Just because of this legislation, they're not authorized. The property owner can authorize them, but this legislation does not.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Dill.
Again, this goes back to the testimony that we received at numerous field hearings, and again, I believe that the legislation is addressing the concerns that were aired numerous times, and appreciate the fact that that is how we're addressing it.
Okay. Mr. Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Tom Peterson. I'm Director of Government Relations of the Minnesota Farmers Union. I, too, have spent a considerable amount of time on the G16 from the beginning, I think about 3 years or so. And, you know, like I said, in agriculture, I just wanted to hit a few of the points. I think you've heard a lot of the testimony over the years that we've been here, and I just wanted to highlight real quickly some of the impacts we'll have in agriculture, and also maybe what's changed from last year when you've heard this. The impact maps are interesting, and you'll see a lot of ag processing on those maps that are affected by agriculture. That's a concern for agriculture. I also want you to know that the farmers are heavily involved now in TMDLs, and farmers are being a part of TMDLs. And I think that's interesting. I was just looking at, and I just had a draft copy of the amendment, but it's, I think it was Section 7 where it says, public agencies shall engage stakeholders in implementation of developing and planning restoration. And I can tell you the PCA does do that. They do call and they do get, you know, they ask for, farmers to be there. And one of our SWCD officers are here today. And we have a farmer that's a SWCD officer that's helping us in the Minnesota River right now. So they do call and they do try to engage stakeholders. And I think that's really impressive. And keep in mind that this will leverage Farm Bill dollars, and we're still working on that. The Department of Ag is working on a fact sheet. I have a copy of it, but it's not quite done yet. And their goal is not this year, but in the future, when we have the full funding, that we would leverage as much as $25 million a year, or at least $25 million a year in Farm Bill programs through using things like conservation planning, landowner technical assistance or advice, it depends on how you say it. And I think that's really important. I've seen, as I've gotten more into this, that a lot of our farmers could be in these programs, but they don't have either the help, like the conservation security program that's available right now. Some of them say the application is 40 pages long, 5 pounds. You need help getting through that. You need to know what you should have had to get into it. If you needed your soil samples for the last 4 years, we see farmers in other states getting ahead on those. And so I think that's really important. And landowner financial assistance cost share is always important to help as an incentive for farmers to get involved in those programs. I also wanted to mention Representative Dill brought up the property rights issue. And farmers are strong property rights advocates. In fact, several hundred farmers will be in the rotunda in a little while on the eminent domain issue. And so they feel strongly about property rights. And we've discussed the citizen monitoring and feel that it is covered in the bill. In fact, as being on this G16 for 3 years now, I signed up to be a citizen monitor on my own place where we have a stream and a river running through our property. And so I feel confident on that language. Again, this language focuses on existing and voluntary programs and enhancing those programs in this bill. And that was something that farmers were concerned about, that we're going to have a bunch of new regulations in this bill, and we don't have it. These are promoting and expanding our existing programs like ag BMP loans and programs like that. We also support the portion of the bill that has the Clean Water Council, and I'm speaking just to the ag provisions. There are seats for agriculture on that. And those are just some of the highlights I wanted to hit on that, and we'll take any questions. Thank you.
Representative Pennis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you said you were working off a draft, and I looked in Section 7, and I didn't see that about stakeholders.
Okay.
Consulting with stakeholders, and maybe it is and renumbered or it's somewhere, but I think that is important. I sure am.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair and Representative Pennis, in Section 8 of the amendment. So, and I can just tell you that, you know, part of my job is a lot of times they'll call and they'll say, can you, you know, get farmers to, and so then I try to find somebody who's engaged in those issues. But I can tell you that it's been interesting to see, and there's different parts of the TMDL that they're doing there in the Minnesota River. And so I'm pleased that we are able to have that kind of input, as are the other farm organizations. I know Corn Growers has been real involved in some of the TMDLs, as is Farm Bureau.
And, President Pennis, on line 30, it spells out the agency shall, this being the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, shall seek broad and early public stakeholder participation, scoping the activities necessary to develop the TMDL, including the scientific models, methods, and approach to be used in TMDL development and to implement restoration pursuant to, and it gives the reference back to this bill. So it, I appreciate that testimony. Any other questions? Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and excuse me if this question has been asked before, but I've got another bill up in education, so I'm right around today. Mr. Johnson, I know you were up in Annandale for the hearing that we had up there. How would this bill affect cities like Annandale, Maple Lake, and their situation?
Johnson. Mr. Chair and Representative Erdahl, in specific, what this bill does is provide some pots of money that those communities can go to get additional resources if they need them to construct their plant in a way that gets around the prohibitions that the Clean Water Act has put on permitting in the state right now. That's the immediate portion. What actually the bill does is provides a long-term funding to get the science done, get the plans in place, so that we don't have communities sitting with that prohibition in place. Because the faster we get the water studied and cleaned up and off the impaired waters list, the faster all of these impacts from the Federal Clean Water Act are gone. The prohibition on all of this starts when a water is impaired. And so cleaning up the water is the obvious thing you have to do to get rid of those restrictions.
Mr. Johnson, just a little clarification. I believe that the words you used of getting around the Clean Water Act, I believe you mean in come into compliance with the Clean Water Act.
Mr. Chair, that is, of course, what I meant. It is getting around the current prohibitions by meeting water quality standards.
Just want to make sure we're all on the same page here. Additional testimony.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Chris Sigford. I'm the Water Quality Director for the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy. And I just wanted to kind of wrap on what the rest of my colleagues have already said to further the question of, you know, what is different, since I know you have heard this bill before. This is the third year, and I appreciate your perseverance, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee. Since last year, we have 400 new water bodies on the impaired waters list for the state of Minnesota, bringing our total to something over 2,300 impaired water bodies in the state. Each and every one of those impairments needs to have a total maximum daily load study done and restoration of the waters to remove the impairment and bring them back into compliance and remove any economic restrictions that may apply. Once, you may remember on the original little quick drill on the Clean Water Act, once you're on the impaired waters, a water body's on the impaired waters list, you have to have a TMDL complete within 13 years of listing. We've been listing for a number of years now, so what was already a kind of a staggering workload is only getting bigger the longer we wait. The other thing that's new since last year is that the Lower Minnesota River TMDL for low dissolved oxygen, which was a nutrient-related problem, is complete. It was complete last year, but the general permit for the 40 dischargers that are covered by that TMDL and need to make some kind of changes to their plants, ultimately, is complete and in place, and as far as I know, operating pretty well. And so those folks in the Minnesota River Basin have had their growth restrictions removed, and we are permitting new discharges in that area, and folks have engaged in a trading program, you know, among the various cities that need to ultimately reach a phosphorus limit. So that's some of the stuff that's new since last year. I urge you to support Representative Osmond's bill. I think it's very important. I think we all do. I think it's got a number of good things in it for the environment, for farmers, for rural homeowners who may have septic problems and so forth, and I think we need to get the job done. Thank you.
Any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to all four of you and anybody else in the audience who might want to contribute. Before we stray too far from monitoring and discussion, I don't think you could. I have a statement and a question of pollution control. Now, there's been federal budget cuts, like Mr. Peterson referred to, and I believe there's only one conservation security program watershed in Minnesota this year. And the last Federal Reconciliation Act had cuts to conservation programs. The proposed budget out of D.C. has more cuts to programs. There's discussion about leveraging federal money. And I just wonder how that affects what's a supposed clean water legacy that only asks for money for this year. And if I could direct the members of the committee to page 11, subdivision 2, 11.16 through 11.20. It identifies about $2.8 million at PCA for the assessment of surface water quality and trends, and another million for grants or contracts to support citizen monitoring of surface waters. And in the testimony from the Center for Environmental Advocacy, it was just stated that there's 400 new listings this year, bringing the number to 2,300 that need TMDLs. Is the amount of money suggested in the bill enough to adequately identify and monitor these impaired water bodies such that there's progress being made to meet that TMDL? I hear a lot of talk around the table about science, 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 and more science, and there's plenty of people in the room who do that science on the ground in their counties, and I really don't think you can have something called a legacy unless, or a decent conversation about Minnesota's water quality and its trends, unless you dedicate and never turn off those monitors and get monitoring data that does not start and stop, is not shifted around because some agency's priorities have changed. You have records, the Minnesota River at Montevideo for, 60 some years, but you don't have any monitoring data for points downstream for those same years. I mean, I think if we're going to be a state that prides itself on clean water, in nice language in a bill, which, we, you know, why would you disagree with all this stuff? And then we leave, and we hear that there's 13 years for you to get your TMDL done. Well, then how are you going to know if your TMDL is going to be done and the water is supposedly cleaner because you're meeting the TMDL if we don't have enough monitoring in Minnesota, all across the state, a comprehensive monitoring plan that I wish it would be not connected to elections and political will and those types of things, which could be decoupled from all of that and just left on. Those monitors need to be installed in Minnesota and left on. If there's not that dedicated funding, I think we're back here all the time talking about how we're so great about cleaning up the water, but we don't have any data. So, but just wondering if that $2.8 million suggested, how many impaired water bodies is that going to cover, and for how long?
If any of you can address that, that'd be fine. We're going to have MPCA have some testimony later also to cover that.
Yeah, I just think, and PCA can fill in later. I think that, you know, I certainly share your concern for the paucity of water quality monitoring that goes on in the state. I think we need to remember that this year we've got a $40 million proposal. It's not the whole meal deal, but it's certainly a good swing at the pinata. We need to get going. This money that is devoted in the bill appropriated for water quality monitoring will be joined by some money that the agency already has, although it's not that much. It's in the range of about $1.5 million, I think. But really, the true need is more on the order of $7 to $8 million a year, every year, for basically in perpetuity. I would just point out, though, also I think that in the way that we've kind of tried to conceive of this program, I think that follow-up, which might think of as follow-up monitoring, once you've done the TMDL and you need to look back and see, did that stream or lake get cleaned up, is incorporated into the implementation and restoration dollars, not into the upfront assessment dollars. So that would be separate. It's more money devoted to seeing how we're doing so we can delist them if they get cleaned up.
Mr. Johnson.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, and to Representative Peterson's question on monitoring, the amount of money in here, this is the startup package, so it's lower than it ends up being in the out years of the plan that we put together for the $80 million a year level. But the intent of that funding, what it was designed to do, is make sure that every 10 years we are getting accurate, scientifically valid monitoring data on all the water bodies we are required by federal law to be monitoring. It was not intended to replace the state's ongoing responsibility for doing permanent monitoring of the sort you're talking about. This was intended to be, how are we going to get the snapshot we need to take every 10 years that meets the federal requirements for studying and assessing the quality of our water. So we didn't try and do both in one place here. This was to meet the TMDL requirements of the Clean Water Act. It will help in that area, but it's not the same thing in all cases.
And Mr. Chairman, real briefly, Representative Peterson did raise a good comment. I should have covered real quickly, too, is that the Farm Bill does go until 2007, the Federal Farm Bill, and the talk in Congress basically is to extend it perhaps for 1 year to 2008 because of negotiations going on with the WTO, is asking our farmers and government to become more green in our farm payments too. And so, but you are right that there has been significant budget cuts, and we've actually have reflected this, and that's why we'll get this to you as soon as possible, that it is less money. The Conservation Security Program only did have one new watershed this year, but still funds the six, I think, that were from the previous years. And my last point on that is that that the farm bills have gotten progressively greener, and so there's every reason to believe that the 2007 or 2008 farm bill will be, in 1985 we had CRP, basically was the conservation plan. Now we have CRP, we have CREP, we have CRP, we have CSP, we have EQIP, we have wetlands and grasslands preserves and other programs. So.
Okay. Questions of these? Representative Higgins.
Yes. Thank you. Representative Peterson brings up good points and reminds me to ask Mr. Johnson, when you're talking about we'll know what's in our waters and we'll know if we're meeting standards, are you including the testing of for pesticides in that?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't know the specific answer to that. That would be a good question for the agency. It would meet the requirements of testing for all the chemical and pollutant requirements that the Clean Water Act requires us to test for. I don't know what's on that specific list for pesticides.
Representative McGee?
I will certainly ask the agency when they come up, but I think we have to be careful not to assure Minnesotans that we will have clean water with that if we are not testing for the full range of things that could be wrong with the water and that science is telling us is indeed wrong with the water now, and pesticides would be a leading one.
Representative Virginia, I think it's a good point, although the objective of this particular legislation is to come into compliance with the Clean Water Act, so it's whatever is in the federal law that would really direct the activity of these particular dollars. That doesn't mean we shouldn't be doing even more. So, Representative Virginia.
It's not the question of doing more or not. It's what we're telling our citizens. They think that when we say we're cleaning up our waters are clean, they think that that's really what we need. And so I think we need to be careful in our language that if that's not what we're doing, that they know. That's the point I really want to make.
Okay. Representative Gaines, I think when the agency comes up, let them speak to the standard that we have, which is swimmable and fishable waters as being the standard. Thank you very much for your testimony. Appreciate
Thank you.
It. We have Dennis Fuchs of Soil and Water Conservation Districts and Leanne Buck of the Minnesota Association of Soil and Water Conservation Districts. Come up, please. Welcome to the committee, and whoever would lead off.
Good morning. Thank you, Representative Osment, members of the committee. My name is Leanne Buck. I'm the Executive Director for the Minnesota Association of Soil and Water Conservation Districts. And I'm also, as I've been dubbed, the G16 member. So it's been an honor and privilege to work with the other G16 members, several of which are in the room. And I also want to say thank you to the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency for the information and the education that they've provided for us as we've gone forward to look at our restoring our waters. Basically, our role, the clean water legislation represents, as we've said, 3 years of work by this coalition. And a lot of the portions of the bill include some funding for soil and water districts to do local restoration activities. And as we work through this three-year process, our group as G16 members, we focused on restoration activities. We wanted this legislation to provide resources to existing government entities and not creating new ones. We're encouraging local leadership and implementation and accountability and with state coordination. And we're also looking at protecting our clean waters while restoring the polluted waters. And if you look at those principles that we've worked with for the Clean Water Legacy, it ties perfectly with the mission of Soil and Water Conservation District. So again, that's my brief overview, and what I'd like to do is turn it over to Dennis Fuchs, a person that works day-to-day with landowners and restoration activities with the Stern Soil and Water District.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. It's great to be here. My name is Dennis Fuchs. I'm the administrator with the Stearns County Soil and Water Conservation District. And as you know, the Clean Water Legacy is going to provide funding for restoration activities to improve Minnesota lakes, rivers, and streams. And that's what we do. We help landowners implement these practices voluntary on their land. And the Clean Water Legacy would utilize and accelerate the existing SWCD programs. Both the technical assistance and our ability to assist landowners in implementing conservation practices. The SWCDs partner with local agencies such as the watershed districts, the county, lake associations, townships, and we also partner with state and federal agencies and other organizations such as Pheasants Forever. The SWCDs know the landscape. We've got five elected officials that help us manage the resources and provide the conservation policy, and they know the landowners and they know our resources. The SWCDs, as I mentioned, have a citizen board, and they govern our work. And as Tom Peterson mentioned about leveraging the Farm Bill programs, most of the saltwater conservation districts in Minnesota are co-located at the USDA Service Center. So we are very tight-knit and have the ability to leverage those funds with state funds and potential state funds, and we can really accelerate the clean water legacy. Just a quick example of a couple programs in Stearns County, talking about leveraging. Currently, we're working with a lake association, the Grand Lake Association, and Pheasants Forever, and the Sauk River Watershed District, and USDA, and Pheasants Forever to accelerate buffers along some of the impaired streams in their sub-watershed around Grand Lake to protect their resources. And we could do similar things with additional funds. We also work very hard in Stearns County in protecting our water resources by repairing feedlots that have potential runoff problems. And we do that with the assistance of USDA, Bowser, MPCA, and the Minnesota Department of Ag. We use a lot of their revolving loan funds. So in summary, the Clean Water Legacy will accelerate the work to restore Minnesota's waters. And the SWCD is a bunch of technical people that can help us get this done quickly.
If you have questions. Okay, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Carrie Thurlow. Mr. Chair. Do you have a question of the taxpayers?
No, not really, but while these folks are getting ready, if Mr. Chair, could if I give you a question on page 9, when they're talking about membership appointments. Definition on lines 9.6 through 9.18. If the governor wanted to appoint somebody from Pheasants Forever or whatever else organization, would that be covered in one of the general descriptions, conservation group that fit into one of those definitions under either 9.8 or 9.9?
Okay, we'll get that answer for you. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Carrie Thurlow. I represent the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. I want to start off by thanking the Chair for being flexible on the third-party TMDL language. It is reflective of the language that Representative Knobloch presented in his bill before the Environment Policy Committee, and I believe that that is a reasonable compromise from our standpoint. I also want to point out, however, that we do still have some concerns with the bill. As you heard from the panel of testifiers that support the bill, one of the ways that we can address the problems created by the Annandale Maple Lake decision, or actually not one of the way to correct and to deal with the economic development moratorium that was created by the Annandale Maple Lake decision, is to ensure the development of TMDLs to move waters off the impaired waters list. From our standpoint and from our understanding, the Pollution Control Agency has told us, and perhaps they've adjusted their figures, but their need for development of TMDLs is somewhere around $8 million a biennium. That was what was proposed in the Knobloch bill, and understanding that there are difficult financial considerations, the proposal in the bill is right now only at $3.1 million. And so we do have some concerns that perhaps that area is not funded enough. The second point I would like to put out raise to the committee is a question that Representative Erdahl raised, is what is this doing to help the cities that are currently being affected by the Annandale Maple Lake decision? Of course, the best way to deal with this, and again, I want to be clear, we should be putting our resources and prioritizing our resources to the development of TMDLs. But we encourage and urge the legislature to adopt pre-TMDL offsetting policies this year. This was a proposal raised by the Representative Knobloch, so again, the criticism we heard was, we don't know what impact that will have on the Court of Appeals decision. I will grant that that is true, but we have not heard that it will have a negative impact, and what we do know is that many other states have pre-TMDL offsetting policies, that they have not been challenged, and that we actually have EPA guidance that allows that. And we think that it is important to include pre-TMDL policy language when we are setting TMDL compliance policy for the state. The last point I would raise is that we would also, as far as setting TMDL policy, would like to raise the issue of requiring the agency to use case-by-case analysis on when it is assessing the waters. This is determining whether water is impaired or not. The agency currently has a proposal that would go to something called strict numeric nutrient standards. And the problem with that proposal is that the scientific journals, the vast majority of those scientific journals say that is not the best possible approach. In fact, a survey done by many states who have enacted TMDL policies have shied away from using strict numeric nutrient standards because it does not produce the best possible results and does not take into all the relevant criteria. Deep lakes need to be evaluated differently than shallow lakes. Reservoirs have different conditions that need to be evaluated differently than lakes. And right now, we think that MPCA is doing a pretty good job of assessing waters using the case-by-case analysis that it is using. And we encourage this legislature to require the agency to continue using that case-by-case analysis. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions, but those are the concerns that we see as we are moving forward toward state policy on this issue.
Okay. Any questions? Okay, I have one with regard to the concern about the dollars on page 11. I thought that the bill you referred to had $4 million per year.
It's $4 million per year, yes.
Okay. And as I read this, we have over $4 million going to the agency, but with $3,170,000 going towards TMDL implementation for this year. This is not a biennium figure.
Oh, excuse me, Mr. Chair. Then I misunderstood, and that's closer to the dollar amount that we understand is needed. I apologize.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you very much. We have Dan Larson.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Dan Larson with the Minnesota Rural Counties Caucus. We're 24 counties that operate as a caucus within the Association of Minnesota Counties. And I'm here today to say that this is the best document that we've seen addressing the need to form or to conform to the Federal Clean Water Act yet. So we think you're getting it closer to perfection, and we're here to say that we are in support of a couple things. This bill provides a process and sets priorities addressing TMDLs, but most importantly, from the Minnesota Rural Counties Caucus perspective, it allows or it recognizes the need for local government input into the process and it includes counties and city participation in the Clean Water Council. Probably most important, unlike earlier proposals, it proposes to fund the program, at least for the first year, from general fund or non-property tax revenues. And that's been a very important point with our organization and a point that we've been trying to make throughout the process. So supportive of the bill for these purposes, and I want to congratulate the author and urge passage.
Any questions? Okay, thank you very much for your testimony. I want to say, for the record, so that it's not just counties and cities, but townships and watershed districts and saltwater conservation districts and all the rest of them at the grassroots level. We're really hoping this, the intent is to emphasize their involvement in this entire process.
Mr. Chairman, the broad-based approach is very good. Inclusion is better. Thank you.
Thank you. See, Mr. Botzik, did you have something you wanted to hand out? Oh, I see it's being handed out. Would you like to make reference to it? Or?
I could, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Gary Botzik, and I'm here today representing the Minnesota On-Site Sewage Treatment Contractors Association, now about a week ago renamed the Minnesota On-Site Wastewater Association, another MOHA. This is MOWA. but just a letter of support, Mr. Chairman, for your bill. I apologize for the crooked top, cut and paste job this morning, and also the reference to the House file, but very much in support of your bill, Mr. Chairman, and your efforts over the last 3 years. And these companies work statewide on septic installations and want to be a very active participants and players in the implementation of this act, and are saying that publicly here today. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll close and let you get to the more important agency testifiers.
Okay. Any questions? I appreciate that support, Mr. Vossig, and it's easier. This is a bill that many of us, when we started off, wanted to go to the general fund. We just didn't have the dollars there because of the deficit situation. So we tried to seek other ways. All of them were unacceptable, and I'm glad now we're able to try and come together on what I think is the real responsibility for this whole thing. It's all of us in Minnesota, and this is definitely a general fund type of activity, in my opinion. Let's see. We have... Is it not here? All right. MPCA, if you come up, there was a couple of or some questions that have been presented. If you'd like to provide whatever testimony you'd like, and then answer or acknowledge those questions, I'd appreciate it. Welcome,
Mr. Chairman. Thank you for the opportunity. My name is Kristen Applegate. I'm the Deputy Commissioner at the Pollution Control Agency. As the other testifiers have stated, we're also very much in support of a proposal to move forward with the Clean Water Legacy Act funding. This is a proposal that is also included in the governor's budget this year. For the Pollution Control Agency specifically, this relates to two general areas of work that we have. The first is around monitoring and assessment. The second is around actual TMDL development and implementation, or the development of implementation plans, and so that is what the funding that's in this bill relates to specifically for the agency. It is essentially the amount that we can incorporate in this first year to get going on those two areas of activity, and we are very pleased to be able to take this first step. And we're happy to answer any questions that you have, Mr. Chairman.
There were some questions, specific questions that were asked before. Do you recall what they were?
Mr. Chairman, I recall one about the general framework for monitoring that maybe I can address, and then if there were others, certainly if folks could help remind me, that would be great.
Okay.
I know that Mr. Chairman, Representative Peterson asked a question about the general framework for monitoring, and essentially what this does is a first step in the first year to an overall framework that would be included with this package in the long term that would assess, we think, accurately the state's waters on a 10-year cycle. And so essentially what that would include is remote sensing technology that would give us a sense for where to prioritize both our stream monitoring and our lake monitoring. I think that we're looking at about 100 or so additional lake assessments per year, starting with the lakes that are over 500 acres. In addition, looking at those areas where we might see priorities based on the remote sensing technology that we would be using. In addition to that, Representative Peterson's point, this would include 86 permanent flow sites for streams as well that would be permanent, not shifting. In addition, though, that would be supplemented with additional stream monitoring that's done in conjunction currently with our citizen stream monitoring. And so it's utilizing the both citizen lake monitoring program that we currently have in place and the citizen stream monitoring that we currently have in place, and then supplementing those with additional remote sensing technology, additional permanent monitors, and additional biological, chemical monitoring that we would do to get an accurate picture, we think, of what's happening in the state and really be able to identify any impairments in the state over the long term.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you for clarifying, and Mr. Chair, thanks for recognizing me. So that's the first step, first year in a 10-year cycle, and you've given some thank you for the details and the numbers. I appreciate that. Okay. What's your estimation as to, and maybe it's not tied into Representative Osmond's bill, and Mr. Johnson corrected me about that not being in this bill today, my comments earlier. How much per year to continue that you just described? You know, say this passes this year and this is going and you get your money, and then we come back next January and the next round of appropriations. How much per year could you give us a ballpark?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative Peterson, the way that we would have structured this if there is a permanent funding solution in place, and I think that the discussion has been around some sort of constitutional dedication of funds both from various legislators and the governor, what it would do is ramp up based on our ability to incorporate this work to about for the assessment piece in at PCA alone. There is additional DNR component to this, but at PCA to about 4.1 million in FY08, 5.8 million in FY09, and 6.3 million in 2010.
Thank you, Nicola.
Let's see, there was also a question, I believe, of Representative Wagenius's with regard to pesticide
testing. Mr. Chairman, I think the Department of Agriculture could probably help me with that. Paul Burns is also in the audience. Okay.
Welcome to the committee.
For the record, my name is Paul Burns. I'm with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. And I have to apologize, I'm not with the pesticide program, so I can't specifically answer Representative Wagenius's question about cuts to the pesticide monitoring program. But as you've heard in testimony earlier today, when we were working to put this package together, we've tried to use existing programs as much as possible. And the committee probably knows better than I do that we already have a pesticide program that includes monitoring program. So when we were putting the budget together, our pesticide people did not, as part of this package, propose additional funding for pesticide monitoring. I should also point out that so far there are no water bodies on the list of impaired waters as being impaired for pesticides. There's one that was close, but it hasn't been added to the list.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. We wouldn't know if we had any lakes that were impaired for pesticides because the Department of Agriculture doesn't test any lakes at all. We do test some streams, but the department doesn't test any lakes, and that's what I was trying to get to. And that is troubling about the Agriculture Department's proposal because it's for best management practices loan program. And the legislative auditor told us that we don't know the outcomes of best management practices at this point. So it seems to me that our first priority should be to see what the outcomes of best management practices are before we do more of them. So that's troubling to me, Mr. Chairman, and the way we're structuring this. I mean, I know that there would be best management practices that might work in certain circumstances, but we don't know.
But Mr. Chairman, Representative Wagenius, I agree. And part of our proposal includes some research funding so that we can quantify, first of all, identify BMPs that might address the specific impairments that are listed, but then also monitor those practices so that we can quantify what kind of benefit we can get for a public investment in helping finance some of those practices. So helping quantify those benefits is part of our package. But again, I can't speak specifically to the pesticides, and I apologize we don't have anyone here from our pesticide folks.
Are you able then to comment with regard to the Clean Water Act and how it impacts pesticide evaluation?
Mr. Chairman, I probably should not try to do that because I'm not the expert in pesticides.
It's very interesting. We'd like to have that as to how this, the Clean Water Act, actually evaluates pesticide impacts on our surface waters. And because that's what this bill is to do is to address the Clean Water Act, so it'd be nice to know how that interfaces.
Mr. Chairman, I'll go back and ask our pesticide people to respond to that.
Okay, and members, we'll get that answer out to all of you. Representative Cornish.
Mr. Chair and members, I was wondering, I had that question about the makeup on page 9, where it lists the governor appointees from 9.5 to 9.18. The question I had is, Mr. Chair, I was wondering if you would be warm up to the idea of an amendment eventually here to put a member from a recognized hunting and fishing group on there and replace one of the two members on 9.8 representing environmental organizations. It seems like we're loaded up with an environmental organizations here in lines 9.8, 9.9, 9.10, 9.11. I mean, considering how those boards are made up today. And I was, rather than grow the board, I was wondering if we could replace a member and put one as a hunting slash fishing organization so that we could get somebody on there with some recognized groups, since I don't know if it really fits under any of the other ones.
There's inquiries that with regard to 9.9, 9.10, I don't think that those organizations are advocacy groups.
No.
And the I understand our environmental organizations may be advocacy, but I wouldn't include them in that same umbrella. But we'll talk about that. I know there is a concern as to how many is too much when you get into some people from or the G16 group would have a recommendation to the committee on that, or if you've discussed it, I'm sure you have. That would be interesting for us, and we'll be looking for that testimony here in a couple minutes. Other questions of the MPCA? Representative Dale.
Thank you, Chair Osmond. This is to Ms. Applegate. In environment policy, when the Knobloch bill was before us, it was a fairly spirited discussion about what that bill would have done and what it would not have done. However, I got lost on the points pro and con of having a pre-offset provision in a bill that eventually would hopefully become law, and how the agency would feel about language that would give you an offset provision prior to the completion and approval of the TMDL. And there was a lot of discussion about how that would affect Annandale Maple Lake, but I was actually trying to think beyond Annandale Maple Lake about that is like a snapshot of something that's happening right now. But what about communities that are on that 400 list that we talked about earlier, or communities that might come on it before we can get a TMDL done? How would you feel about laser firing at that type of a approach, having a pre-offset? Ms. Thurlow suggested that other states have done that.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman and Representative Dill, it's complicated in the sense that, of course, this is what the court case related to Maple Lake and Annandale specifically addresses. And so the offsetting was the approach that the MPCA used in that situation and was specifically overturned by the court. Now, of course, awaiting review by the Supreme Court on that matter. In the meantime, we believed we had the authority to do this, which is why that was our approach previously, is sort of as we were waiting to complete TMDLs, this does take some time, we used offsets as a way to essentially do no harm to that water body and still be able to manage the permits and other responsibilities that the agency had during that period of time. Because of the court decision, I don't know that this would actually, we don't believe legislative language would necessarily give us the authority to issue those permits using offsets, because that's what the court decision specifically precluded. So it would leave us in kind of a position of the legislature with a position that the agency thought we had the authority previously to use and a court decision to the contrary. So I don't know that we would actually be in the position to issue permits even with that language. I think what our testimony was intended to deliver last time in terms of the message. It just leaves us in a confused spot, I believe.
Follow, Mr. Chair.
President Dill.
So I understand. I'm glad you clarified that. One last question about mm-hmm. that. Had the Clean Water Legacy bill or some legislation been passed before the decisions on Annandale Maple Lake, giving the PCA authority to do offset, Minnesota legislation, would that have helped? Do you think that would have helped the cause in terms of the suit, or do you think the suit would have moved forward? I mean, I know that's a do you think, but...
Mr. Chairman, hypothetical question, potentially that could have clarified a state position, made it clear. I mean, these are, you know, implementation of the Clean Water Act, and particularly in these areas, has been, you know, complex and not entirely consistent across all states. And so it potentially could have helped. I believe that the suit may have still been brought, but and because of the complexity of Lake TMDL, Lake Pepin TMDL, we may still have been in the position of having some period of time to wait here. But it's very hard to say. I think it's in the sense of probably a do no harm provision, but I don't know that it necessarily helps move us out of the position that we're currently in either.
Other questions? Okay, thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Members, I have a couple of documents passed out to you. One is an A1 amendment that references the subject that Representative Dale is talking about with regard to offsets. This has been presented in other forums, as Ms. Thurlow mentioned, in that they presented it in the context that they felt that language like this would actually prevent lawsuits and or prevent the type of decision that the courts made in the past. I also pass out to you House research letter from Mark Shepard, one of our analysts, that concurs with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency that we really don't know as to what how the courts would deal with this issue. It's unlikely that they would take this language and reverse a court decision. So I wouldn't want to have us consider this as, quote, the answer, that all, you know, passing this somehow would result in reversing a court decision. I just don't think that that's realistic at all. On the other hand, I don't know that it does any harm either. And so I'd like to ask for some public testimony on the pros and cons of doing this. We've heard the pros, I believe, a little bit, but I'd like to know if there's organizations and or individuals that really feel that this would do some harm if we included language like this. Representative Wagenius.
I'm not sure about the harm right now, but I know that this proposition would be very expensive because we would be concentrating on hiring lawyers instead of cleaning up waters. Because one of the things I noticed right away, it's a direct offset, so the water gets no cleaner. It's not a, like, two-for-one or something offset like that. Mm-hmm. So I would think a court would be even less happy about that if there was a trade-off, a two-for-one trade-off, for example. Maybe a court would be happy about it. But the real issue here, and in this whole, all of what we're doing, is are we spending money to clean up the problem, or are we going to spend money on lawsuits? And I worry about that a lot in this whole approach.
Representative Keenis, I share that. That's the reason I'm not offering this amendment, but I felt it might come up today, mm-hmm. and I didn't want to have people think that we're trying to avoid this question,
mm-hmm.
and that I also see it as potential additional litigation instead of an actual answer
mm-hmm.
To the problem that's been facing us and the challenge that's facing Minnesota. But I'd also like to open it up for public testimony, see if others have an opinion. Representative Peterson, you had a comment?
Yeah, I think following up on what Representative Wagenius has said, this reminds me of comments that and discussions we've had in this committee about wetlands and you know, the draining of wetlands in one area with the supposed increase or augmentation of wetlands way far, 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 far away from where that actual wetland that's being affected is. I think this is a part of it, and maybe relating to other sources of water, maybe surface water, and the continuity of watersheds and cleaning up water where it is needed, not buying into this idea of mitigation banking as the way to get around your environmental problems because you want to slam some development into an area that you know will make money. So I would just say this is something I would not support.
Any other comments, questions, any testimony? Okay. Representative Johnson.
Would this amendment, thank you, Mr. Chair, be directed then towards the water that was impaired? I mean, is it staying in the same watershed? Is that what the intent is? It wouldn't be a...
Representative Johnson, I don't know that it is... it would be an offset, but I don't know if it has to be... MPCA would have to tell me as to how this has been utilized in the past. I know they did attempt it in the same watershed in the Annandale-Maple Lake area where they, I think it was Litchfield that they tried to offset from, and that was inadequate in the court's determination. Would you like to provide us some advice?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Again, for the record, my name is Kristen Ford. I'm the Water Quality Director for the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy. And I just wanted to say a few words in opposition to this amendment. As I'm sure you all know, this is a matter of federal law. It's the Code of Federal Regulations 122.4I, which prohibits issuance of a permit to a new or expanded discharger that will cause or contribute to an impairment in the absence of a total maximum daily load, or at least the waste load allocation portion of a total maximum daily load, which is the diet plan for all the point source discharges. It seems to me that at first blush, this amendment is completely unnecessary because, this matter is pending before the Supreme Court. If the court says that upholds the Court of Appeals, then this legislation would be null and void because state law cannot trump federal law. If the Supreme Court finds that such offsetting is okay, then you don't need the legislation, and it's extraneous. I wanted to say a couple of words about two of the handouts that were given out at the committee hearing last Tuesday before Environment Finance by the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. The CGMC attempted to show that this type of offsetting is okay with EPA under their trading policy. That is not the case. In fact, EPA's trading policy does not excuse compliance with 122.4I through offsetting. It says, and I quote, "The Clean Water Act provisions and regulations contain legally binding requirements. This policy does not substitute for those provisions or requirements." This, again, is the citation is from the United States Environmental Protection Agency's Office of Water Quality Trading Policy, January 13, 2003, page 3, the very same document that was quoted by CGMC in committee last week. EPA's policy goes on to say, "Water quality trading and other market-based programs must be consistent with the Clean Water Act." EPA's policy further acknowledges that trading is best accomplished post-TMDL, but if it is used pre-TMDL, there must be a formal trading document or program with a total load or goal against which the trades are calculated. Again, that's in clean water parlance, that's the waste load allocation portion of the total maximum daily load. You need to know your target. You need to know what you're shooting at so you're not shooting in the dark. And then the EPA's policies goes on to say that if a pre-TMDL trade does not achieve the water quality standards, which is exactly the case that we have before the Supreme Court, Litchfield did not solve the problems of Lake Pepin, that EPA expects the TMDL to be done. So I'd be happy to provide that guidance to you directly if you're interested, but that's what it says. Second, CGMC distributed a list of citations to other states' administrative codes that allegedly show allowed such offsets for new and expanded discharges that were going to contribute to a pollution problem pre-TMDL. We pulled every single one of those citations off Westlaw and took a look at them. And in fact, in reviewing them, it becomes clear that that is in fact a serious misrepresentation. All but one of those states that were cited allow trading only after a TMDL has been developed, or at least the waste flow allocation portion of the TMDL, consistent with federal regulation and contrary to the Knobloch bill and this amendment that's under consideration by the committee. To the extent that Michigan is a bit of an outlier, it's a little confusing also because it says you can trade before a TMDL, but that applies only to waters that are not impaired. So they need a TMDL anyhow. So you really have no state administrative rules that were cited to that allow what this amendment does. Thank you.
If you have any questions. Thank you very much for your testimony. Anyone else? Hey, members, the document that, just for the record, Research Department, Mark Shepard's letter of March 13th, states in the second paragraph, it is unlikely that a state law would be effective in influencing the application of the federal regulation. In the last paragraph, it said, it could be argued that passage of a state law upholding the PCA's interpretation would bolster the case that a reviewing court should defer to the PCA. While the entire subject of courts deferring to administrative agencies is very complex, my sense is that passage of a state law is unlikely to affect the degree to which a reviewing court defers to an administrative agency. And with that, members, I'd like to move on. Okay. Right now we have the bill before us. Is there any questions with regard to how the bill outlines expenditures? I believe that this is consistent with the supplemental recommendations of the governor.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. We heard from the Pollution Control Agency about their expected outcomes from this money. They quantified how much would be done. I don't see that in monies we get to the Agriculture Department, the Board of Soil and Water Sources, or DNR. This is just continuation of previous spending patterns. And I think as we go on, we need to have some measure of outcome as we work on this issue. Besides creating, these monies don't necessarily create a TMDL. Some of them are prevention money. That's good. I actually am pleased to see that, But we ought to be able to measure the bang we're getting for the citizen's buck. And that I don't see in here. And I think we could figure out a sentence or so in reporting back to us the outcomes of in preventing. I see the intention is good, but whether we get a bang for a buck is not outlined.
All right. We'll get opportunities in the future to try and improve this, and we'll certainly take a look at that. Any other comments or questions? Members, we're a little uncertain right now as to what's going to happen with regard to supplemental bills. We know that the governor has presented one for supplemental proposals, but we have not been given direction as to how to respond to that. We haven't seen a supplemental bill introduced yet, as to my knowledge. And so what I'd like to do is to have a motion, or put to you a motion, we recommend this bill be passed and that we lay it over for inclusion in a supplemental bill. Should the chair be informed that there is not going to be a supplemental bill, that the chair is authorized to forward this bill to Ways and Means with recommendation to pass. And that way we kind of got both areas covered. And if we're told there's not going to be a supplemental bill, then we can go ahead and send this on its own. And if there's a supplemental bill, then we'll have to keep it for inclusion and supplemental. Is there any questions on that motion? Representative Hatberg.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. So your motion would be to pass this, but then lay it over, and then we wouldn't have an opportunity to possibly see this again to make any changes, or you would just send it on to Ways and Means?
Ways and Means.
Okay, without us seeing it again.
I'm ready. If we weren't concerned about the supplemental dollars that were out there, the motion would be just to send it to Ways and Means right now.
Okay.
But I'd like to hold back so we don't have a loose bill out there with regard to funding. Without knowing how we're handling all the funding.
And I'm good with that, Mr. Chair. It's just that Representative Cornish brought up an issue, and I thought maybe we could address that issue with the members that are going to be on this council. And, in previous legislation, I see that there were one member representing environmental organizations, and now we have two. And I think Representative Cornish brought up a good comment that maybe we should leave one from an environmental organization, maybe put one from a statewide hunting organization. Maybe divide that up. And we didn't discuss that. I thought we were going to get to that, and we never did.
And I forgot that. I appreciate that. Thank you for reminding me. We have testimony on that point from G16 members. I'm sure this has been discussed on the makeup of the council, and they've considered other groups. And could you maybe give us a... We probably have had testimony on this in the past. I just don't recall it in detail.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Mike Robertson from the G16, representing the Minnesota Chamber. Our biggest problem in trying to develop recommendations for the council was how to keep the numbers within a manageable limit. We have no objection to someone representing a hunting or fishing organization. We know that those organizations know a lot about water and the importance of water and have a great interest in that. We recognize that it's a judgment for the committee as to who should, in the end, be on this. We're just trying to limit the numbers and not get too large of a group. So we don't have any objection to adding hunting or fishing. That's my opinion right now. We haven't caucused this or had a discussion recently on it, but we certainly recognized as we were talking about this that those kinds of organizations have a great interest and knowledge about water quality.
Representative Porsche?
Well, Mr. Chair, my concern is that the term environmental reeks of advocacy, and I don't mean reeks in a bad way, but I mean it's just advocacy when you think of an environmental group, and I don't see a hunting and fishing really under any category there, and I have nothing against advocacy, but I'd like to see advocacy from somebody like Minnesota Waterfowl Association, who spends a large majority of his time with waterfowl, aquatic biologists and wildlife biologists, and knows quite a bit about the water involved, too.
Do you have a suggested amendment you'd like us to consider?
I would move an amendment, Mr. Chairman, if we would change on line 8, make that a 1 instead of 2, and then add somewhere, and maybe council can help us with this, is just one member from a statewide hunting organization. That would not build the group, the council, any larger, just... divides that up. One hunting member and one from an environmental organization. Because, like I stated earlier, Mr. Chairman, in previous bills, there was only one environmental organization in there anyway.
Yeah. And the Representative Hepburn, how do we deal with fishing?
Well, I think, Mr. Chairman, if you look at, what line is it, line 11 and 12, one member representing nonprofit organizations focused on improvement of lakes and streams. I think that's kind of covered under fishing there.
Representative McKinney's.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Hackbarth, I understand perfectly well why we would want somebody from waterfowl, because the ducks live in the water. But deer, why wouldn't we, I don't see that as the key issue here, and hunting is broad, and if you were to say waterfowl, I think it would maybe more clearly get at what you just presented to us.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Heck?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Wagenius, I think that when you speak about hunting, I think you talk about, and this bill, and having to do with clean water, I think it talks about all hunting. I mean, it takes in pheasants and deer and everything. And, with the dedicated funding bill, we constantly are talking about how that's going to benefit wildlife and hunting and fishing and everything. And I think that's kind of focused in that area. And I think it only makes sense to put one of those hunting organizations in this bill, not just focused on waterfowl, but it could be somebody from waterfowl. The governor could make that decision. Or it could be somebody from Pheasants Forever or somebody from Minnesota Deer Hunters Association. It could be any of those groups.
Mr. Chair, maybe the council could help us out if where to put it, and if a hunting, fishing, statewide recognized hunting, fishing group. What do you think?
Well, my amendment was for hunting.
Okay. Sure. We had a couple of options here, Representative Hackbarth. We can vote on your amendment right now. Or I'd be very willing to lay this over and let us kind of work on this to see if we can come up with...
That would be fine, too, Mr. Chairman. I leave that to your discretion.
Because there's nothing... We don't know what to do with this bill. So I think my motion kind of revealed that. We're not quite sure which is the avenue to take, whether we're supposed to do a supplemental bill or have it go on its own. So why don't we just lay the bill over and see if we can't work on this and get it resolved and then come back with something that maybe all of us can support.
That'd be fine with me, Mr. Chairman.
Because I believe your concept is good. I just write words and I think maybe we can get it solved.
Absolutely. I don't want to rush anything.
Okay. So members, with that, we will, the Senate file 762, as amended, is laid over.
Thank you.
Members, we are adjourned.